Stop. This message could save you from investing your precious time into a true crime story that goes nowhere. Avoid that disappointment. You need True Crime Feed Podcast. Unlimited, premium, true crime, curated for you. Find out about a female serial dater turned serial killer. The truth about the DARE program. Bizarre black markets, political murder plots, and a school for troubled teens so horrific it could be a Stephen King novel. You know those feels you get when you're turning into a primo true crime podcast? The thrill chills. You can't get enough. But not every podcast hits the same. You can spend hours sifting through mediocre shows that don't deliver the goods. Well, not anymore. True Crime Feed Podcast has your back. True Crime Feed sifts through the archives from the past decade to select the best cases and gives you a quick overview sprinkled with a teensy bit of humor, plus a weekly top three power ranking for shows currently trending, and lets you know what shows to send down your podcast queue trapdoor. You know you want those thrill chills. So, come and get them. Subscribe to True Crime Feed. That's True Crime, F-E-E-D, wherever you get your podcasts.
This summer, the world must answer one question. Why has no one made a popsicle that gets you high yet?
That's right, it's summer, and it's time for you to get your hands on America's new favorite product, Danksicles. 20 milligrams of THC in two great flavors, the latest and greatest innovation from IndiCloud.
Is IndiCloud the greatest company to come out of America? Maybe. But what we do know for sure is that IndiCloud is the best way to get dispensary-grade cannabis delivered directly to your door, 100% legally. Yes, they ship legally to all states. No medical card needed. Whether it's vapes as big as your head, flowers you won't find in your mom's garden, or of course, popsicles that get you high as what are you waiting for? Go to IndiCloud.co/spring24 and get discreet delivery on top shelf THC products. Head over to IndiCloud.co/spring24. That's co, not com, to snag 30% off your first order.
Hey everyone, my name is Nikki Young, and this is Serial Napper, the number one true crime podcast for naps. I'm back with another true crime story to lull you to sleep, or perhaps to give you nightmares. 28-year-old Kanika Powell was a young military veteran who lived in an apartment by herself in Prince George County, Maryland. She's been described as a strong, independent woman whose life experiences made her very capable of handling stressful situations. However, all of that would change in August of 2008, when Kanika would receive a series of strange visitors to her front door. The first was a man, dressed in plain clothing, claiming to be an FBI agent, who refused to produce a badge to prove his identity. Kanika was shaken to her core, especially when this was followed up by a man who claimed to be a FedEx driver, demanding she open her door so that he could deliver a package, one that he was not carrying. She thought that someone was after her, and her suspicions were confirmed when on August 28, 2008, she returned home after running some errands and was gunned down in the hallway of her apartment building. Kanika's killer has never been caught, leaving her family to wonder who had targeted her and why. So, let's jump right in. Kanika Powell was born on January 31st, 1980, to her single mother, Judy. From an early age, it was clear that she would follow in her mom's footsteps by becoming a fiercely independent young lady. Described as feisty and ambitious, Kanika decided to join the Army at just 20 years old, only a few years after graduating from high school. Her military career really took off, with her first major posting landing her all the way in Korea. Still, she kept in close contact with her family, especially her mother and her friends, writing lots of letters to send back home. That's one thing about Kanika, Though she was known to be opinionated at times, she was also incredibly sweet and kind-hearted. Kaniga would spend a few years here until she decided to leave the military and return to Prince George's County, Maryland, in 2004. This is where she landed her dream job, working at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. We don't know a whole lot about what she was doing in this role. It was kind of hush-hush. But we do know that those working at this lab require top security clearance as they're working on homeland security projects. She would be handling classified information, and sometimes she would need to travel to pick up documents for the lab. But again, it was all very secretive. Her mother said that the way Kaniga talked about it reminded her of someone who worked in the FBI. She had an important job, but none of her family really knew what it entailed. Kaniga would be employed as a contractor for 2 years before being offered a full-time position. She lived alone in a quiet apartment complex, but she had recently started dating someone new who she was really excited about. Kaniga identified as bisexual and was in a fairly new, somewhat casual relationship with a woman. At 28 years old, with her own place, a dream job, and someone to spend her free time with, life was good. But things would take a really strange turn on August 23rd, 2008, when Kaniga heard a knock at her front door. She was a young woman who lived alone, so she knew better than to just open the door to anyone. Instead, she looked through the peephole, and she saw a man she didn't know standing in the hallway of her apartment complex. He claimed to be an FBI agent, telling her to open the door because he needed to speak with her immediately. Her mind was racing. Why would someone from the FBI want to speak with her? What had happened? Kaniga responded by asking to see his badge. He held up something that looked kind of like a police badge, but it didn't have a photo identification with it. To Kaniga, it looked fake, like something you could just order online. Her heart raced even faster. She wasn't naive. A legitimate FBI agent would be able to produce a legitimate badge. So who was this strange man? She refused to open the door, and eventually he gave up and he left. When the man was gone, she called the police who attended the scene, but unfortunately they couldn't locate this strange man. They did, however, take down a report just in case he ever came back or there was any other issues. She described this person as a black male, dressed in a black hat, with black glasses and a North Face jacket, which was unusual because it was August, it was summertime, so a jacket like that was way too hot to be wearing. This outfit also isn't in line with what an FBI agent would be wearing to an official call. Kaniga also contacted the FBI to see if this was a legitimate visit by one of their agents, and she was told that it didn't sound like it was. Typically, they would go to calls with a partner. They would absolutely be able to produce a badge that had the shield and their photo identification next to it. Plus, they didn't have anything in their system to indicate that anyone from the FBI was looking to speak to Kaniga. She was so shaken up, believing that someone was trying to scam her, so she let her rental office know what was happening. And 2 days later, she sent out an email to her friends and family warning them. The subject line read, "Weekend," and the email said, "I just wanted to share with you the scariest thing that happened to me this weekend. Saturday evening around 7 p.m., a man was knocking at my door. As all of you may know, I live alone. I asked who it was and he didn't answer. So once I got close to the door and looked out of the peephole, I saw a male figure that was not familiar to me at all. I asked who he was, and all he stated was that he was from the FBI and he was looking for Kaniga Powell. It freaked me out completely because this man knew my name. He held a shield up, but no picture ID, and he never gave his name. He told me he was looking for me in regards to an investigation. I told him that I had no idea as to what he was talking about, and that he would need to show me documentation as well as a warrant of some sort. So he left, and I looked out of my bedroom window and saw him walking. I also heard a voice tell him to walk in the opposite direction. The whole situation was scary and seemed so false. So because of this incident, not only did I get no sleep for the rest of the weekend, but I'm now trying to get an alarm system installed in my apartment. I had one in my old apartment, but I just hadn't had it transferred over to my new one. As far as everything that happened with the guy, I did call the FBI and they told me that it was more than likely bogus because they never come to your door by themselves and they always leave a card of some sort so that you can contact them. I called the local police as well to give them a description just in case someone is out there trying to rape or harm single women. Pass this on, ladies. This is not a fake forward. This happened to me, Kanika. Who knows who these guys are and what they are doing and in what areas other than mine? So while this man showed up outside of her door by himself, he wasn't even alone. After he had left, Kanika had gone to her window to get a better look at him, and this is when she heard another man giving him direction on where to walk. So was this other person helping him to try to avoid where cameras were placed outside of the apartment complex? She also noted that he was carrying some sort of binder, an envelope or a file folder in his hand. What could have been inside? The other thing about this email that is troubling is that this man knew her name, so he knew who she was and where she lived. Whatever the intention, this was very much targeted. Be totally honest with me for a minute. How much water do you drink in a day? Are you getting anywhere close to the recommended 3 liters of water? Okay, confession time. I used to go days without realizing that I hadn't had a single sip of water. I know it's terrible, but I promise I've been doing better lately, and my 310 hydration enhancers have been helping me immensely. Now all I need to do is grab my knockoff Stanley cup, hey, don't judge me, my favorite flavor of drink mix, and I'm good to go. 310's water hydrators make my water delicious so that I actually enjoy drinking water now because water doesn't have to be boring. It's a little sweet treat in my day without all of the sugar. 310 offers these refreshing healthy lemonade mixes that I'm obsessed with. The watermelon flavor, I audibly gasped and went, it's one of the most delicious things I think I've ever tasted. But my personal favorite is kiwi strawberry. And I love that they come in single on-the-go sticks, so I can toss them in my purse and use them in my water bottle on the go. If water's not your thing, I mean, it should be, 310 Nutrition has a variety of options to help you embrace wellness, like their delicious all-in-one shakes. And they're adding new products all of the time. Right now, 310 is celebrating a new year of goals with code NAPPER and giving you, my listeners, 50% off up to $100 off your first order. With so many sample packs and new products, it's really fun and easy to put together an order or start a subscription on products you know you'll use. Go to 310nutrition.com and use the code NAPPER right now for 50% off up to $100 for your first order. That's 310nutrition.com and use code NAPPER. And the FBI confirmed that this wasn't a real agent, so I can't imagine the terrifying thoughts that must have been running through Kanika's head. When she spoke with her mother, Judy, about the harrowing situation, she told her that she believed she was being set up for a scam. To try to protect herself, she installed a security alarm system inside of her apartment. But this would not stop these strange visits from occurring. Her friends and family tried to get her to stay with them for just a few days, just to be on the safe side, but Kanika declined. She refused to be terrorized in her own home. Like I said, she was fiercely independent, a veteran, highly intelligent, and not someone to be messing with. On August 27th, 5 days after the fake FBI agent had showed up at her apartment, there was another knock at the door. Again, she didn't answer it right away. Instead, she looked through her peephole and asked the man she saw standing there to identify himself. Kanika described this man as African-American, around 6 feet tall with a beard. He had on a FedEx shirt, shorts over short pants, white socks, and tan Timberland boots. Now, according to what she would later tell the police, he asked if she was Kanika Powell, and she said yes. Then he said he had a package to deliver to her. She told him to just leave it at the door, to which he responded he needed her signature to turn the package over to her. She noticed right away that he wasn't even carrying a package with him, but he claimed that he'd have to go back downstairs and get it once she had signed for it. When she looked out her window, she didn't see a FedEx truck or any other kind of delivery truck around, so she refused to open the door. Kanika's cousin, who lived in the same apartment complex as her, just so happened to be returning home, and she also witnessed this man wearing the FedEx shirt. She confirmed that she too did not see any kind of mail delivery truck around the building. The man left without leaving behind any kind of delivery notice, which you'd think he would have done if it were a legitimate delivery. Kanika called FedEx, and she confirmed that there were not any packages that needed to be delivered to her. This just confirmed to her that someone was targeting her, and they weren't backing down, because the very next day, around 7:30 in the morning on August 28th, there was yet another knock on the door. Again, it was a man who said that they were there to deliver a package to her, but who the hell delivers a package at 7:30 a.m.? Kanika refused to open the door for this man, and eventually he gave up and he left, after which Kanika called her mother in a panic. Her mother, Judy, would recall the phone conversation where her daughter had told her that this was not some random, ordinary scam. She was being targeted by someone who knew her name and wanted to get access to her. She called the police again, but they didn't find anything helpful at the scene that could possibly identify these strange men. During another conversation with one of her friends, Kanika noted that she kept finding cigarette butts lying on the ground in front of her front door. This only started happening recently with these strange visits. She believed that someone was leaving them there purposely to let her know that they had been waiting for her. Kanika was becoming afraid to leave her house, but she was planning to take off for a weekend out of town with her girlfriend the following day, and it was a break from her current reality that she desperately needed. She had taken the day off from work as she had some running around town to do to pick up a few things for her trip. She also had to have her car serviced. She had to get these things done, and she thought at least it would be better to do it during the daytime so that she could get back home safe to her apartment before it got dark. Sadly, Kanika wasn't safe even in broad daylight. She tried to brush off the early morning fake delivery and get her errands done. She returned back to her apartment complex just before noon. As she walked down the hallway towards her unit, there was someone waiting around the corner with a gun. She was shot multiple times before the suspect fled the scene. The other residents living in the building heard the gunshot and called 911. Kanika would be found lying in the hallway, still alive but gravely wounded. Her keys and purse were discovered right next to her, meaning whoever had done this was not trying to rob her because they didn't take anything. All of her belongings remained at the scene. Kanika would pass away from her injuries in the hospital the following day. Kanika's murder would baffle the police. There was basically no evidence to collect. The handgun that was used in the murder, it was never recovered. Unfortunately, there weren't witnesses who actually saw the shooting, and there weren't any security cameras in the hallway of the apartment complex. There was one neighbor who reported hearing Kanika yell out, "No, no, no," before the gun went off. There didn't appear to be any clear motive for what was done to her. Kanika had a clean police record. She wasn't involved in drugs or any other illegal activity. Nothing was taken from her, so robbery wasn't a motive. And no one had any clue as to who might want to hurt her. Investigators weren't even sure if the fake FBI agent and the fake FedEx delivery men were the same people or if they were even connected to the shooting. Kanika believed that they were different people, but they may have been wearing disguises, so police did not rule that out. Initially, it was thought that maybe her killing had something to do with her top secret job at the Hopkins lab. As part of her employment, she would sometimes have to go on these secret trips to pick up things for the lab, but she couldn't tell anyone where she was going or discuss any of the specifics. So did Kanika know something that she wasn't supposed to know? Was someone trying to silence her? The internet went wild with this theory when less than 3 months after 31-year-old Sean Green was murdered. Like Kanika, Sean had a very secretive job working at the National Counterterrorism Center in McLean, Virginia. While he was sitting in his car waiting at a traffic light that was located about 30 minutes away from where Kanika lived, a masked gunman pulled up beside him and shot him 9 times. According to Corporal Clinton Copeland, a spokesman for Prince George's County Police, quote, "It doesn't appear to be a carjacking. He was sitting at the light. He wasn't the only car there. It's weird stuff, a mystery right now." Investigators had trouble identifying a motive in his killing too, because again, nothing was stolen from the scene, and it did appear to be a targeted shooting. There were other people sitting in their cars at this same red light, and yet the gunman specifically went up to Sean's car to shoot him. Rumors swirled that the two murders might somehow be connected, or it could even be the same gunman because both victims had worked in national security. However, local police were quick to rule that out, saying, quote, "There's no indication that the two killings are connected." Another rumor that quickly made its rounds was related to a serial killer who had been lurking somewhat in the area where Kanika lived. Not too far from where she lived, at least. 25-year-old Jason Thomas Scott was dubbed the mother-daughter killer after he committed a series of heinous murders between June 2008 to March 2009. He was convicted of killing 5 women in Prince George's County, including Vilma Butler, Karen Lofton, Karen's 16-year-old daughter, Carissa, Dolores DeWitt, and Dolores' 20-year-old daughter, Ebony. Now, there are a few notes of interest when comparing Jason's crimes to what had happened to Kanika. Though it wasn't FedEx, Jason did work at UPS, and he would use their database to find his targets and then to find additional information about his victims. Then he would stake out their homes, learning the victims' routines, whether or not they had security systems. Before committing the final act of murder, he would break in and cut their phone lines, disable any alarms that they had, and leave windows and doors unlocked so that he could gain easy access later. Jason killed at least 3 of his victims by shooting, and many times he used an accomplice to help him with his crimes. But he didn't try to hide his identity by pretending to be something like an FBI agent or a delivery man. So while there are some similarities, it doesn't seem likely that Jason Thomas Scott would continue to target Kanika specifically, especially because each interaction with Kanika put the killer at risk of being caught. Whoever killed Kanika targeted her specifically and was committed to seeing her murder through. Jason never admitted to any of the murders that he was charged with, though according to his attorney, through his Alford plea, he, quote, "doesn't admit guilt but acknowledges that prosecutors have enough evidence to convict him." The police believe that there may be more victims of Jason Thomas Scott that have yet to be linked with him. However, he has never been named a suspect in Kanika's murder. So then we have to ask, who would want to hurt Kanika Powell? The killer was someone who knew her name and knew where she lived, But the fact that the fake FBI agent and delivery men asked her if she was Kanika Powell leads us to believe that they didn't know her personally, otherwise they would have recognized her voice and knew it was her. So was this some kind of professional hit? Did someone pay to have Kanika killed? The events leading up to her death don't exactly scream professional. Each time these strangers showed up at her door, it was during broad daylight when there would have been people moving around, coming in and out of the apartment complex. They risked being seen each time they knocked on her door, and that risk grew each time they returned. Why show up at her door and announce yourself? Wouldn't a professional mitigate all of those risks by waiting for a moment when it was perhaps dark, no one was around, and they could surprise her? Instead, Kanika was on high alert, which would have made their job all that much harder, especially with the police now being on notice. Kanika didn't really have any known enemies, but some have pointed out that her death could be related to her personal life and the new woman who she was seeing. She had plans to take a trip with this woman the day after she was murdered. They were going to be going to the Pride Festival in Atlanta together. Now, it's alleged that this new girlfriend had an angry ex-boyfriend. He may have seen Kanika as a threat and wanted to stop the two of them from going away together. This man has been described as volatile. This theory can be backed up by the escalation of events. The first knock on the door by the supposed FBI happened about 5 days before the women were going to be spending the weekend together. The first supposed FedEx delivery happened the night before she was murdered, followed by another supposed delivery the very morning she was murdered. And then it was only about 4 hours after the second supposed package delivery that Kanika was actually murdered in her hallway of the apartment complex. So was someone trying to stop this weekend trip from happening? It kind of seems like they were set on killing Kanika that day before the weekend happened. It has been 16 years since Kanika Powell was targeted and killed outside of her home, and no one has been charged with her murder. If you have any information that might be helpful to the investigation, you're encouraged to contact the Prince George's County Police Department. I have the number here. It's 301-352-1200. There is a cash reward of up to $25,000 for information leading to the arrest of those responsible for her death. That's it for me tonight. If you want to reach out, you can find me on Facebook at Serial Napper. I also have a Serial Napper true crime discussion group. It's called Serial Society, and I'll have a link in my show notes. I'd love to chat with you about this case and all of the other cases, plus everything else that's going on with true crime. You can find my audio on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. I also post all of my episodes in video format over on YouTube, so go check it out. And if you are watching on YouTube, I would love it if you can give me a thumbs up and subscribe. I'm over on X, formerly known as Twitter, at @Serial_Napper, and I post things on TikTok, Serial Napper Nick, and that's all one word. Until next time, sweet dreams, stay kind, especially in the comments. Bye.